And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And it is a very good morning to you. It's just about to turn 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 24th of January, 2023. How are you keeping? I do hope you are well. I think this morning, probably the real first morning that it felt like the mornings were a little bit brighter, and you can see it in the evenings too. It just gives you a little bit of a spring in your step, doesn't it? What do you think? 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts open to that number. Heard in the news there about higher pass rates. We heard about lower pass rates for NCTs, but we've got higher pass rates in terms of driving test figures. Why do you think that is? We heard from one person there, believing it a rural urban divide. Is there any other reasons, do you think? Get involved in the conversation. Give us a call on 07491 25,000. Caroline taking your calls. Get engaged by watching us. Open up on your Fire Stick, the YouTube app, or on your smart TV. You can watch us on your big screen, Highland Radio Ireland. You can see most of our guests there as well, or Facebook Watch, or the Facebook app, dependent on whether you're watching on your Fire Stick, your smart TV, your phone, tablet, or laptop. No excuses not to be involved in the show. And also on our website, highlandradio.com. Click Watch Live there and watch in browser if you so wish. Right, let's look at the newspapers this morning, because we've a lot to squeeze in today for you. Let's kick off with the Derry Journal. Inishowen County Councillors are seeking a meeting with Donegal County Council to ascertain the situation relating to social homes in the peninsula impacted by defective blocks. At the recent Inishowen Municipal District meeting, Councillor Martin Farron said he understood there were something in the region of 1,000 properties in Inishowen impacted, and the proposed he proposed that the people dealing with this let us know what's happening. I'd like to get a presentation and for them to let us know where they are on this, because there's a lot of people living in council-owned properties affected by MICA, and they have they have a certain level of uncertainty about their future and where they might be as well. So I think that's a valid call from the councillor there. The Donegal Democrat, the new Bishop of Ossory, St Johnstone, man Bishop Niall Cole, is urging Christians not to push God to the margins of life or to retreat into a holy huddle. He was speaking during his episcopal ordination, which took place at the Cathedral of Mary in Kilkenny on Sunday, and was attended by his family, friends and colleagues from the Raphoe Diocese. A skilled theologian, the 59-year-old arrived at third level in both St Patrick's College Carlow and St Mary's University College in Belfast. He worked with young people at secondary level in St Union's College Letterkenny and Pobleskull Narasson. As a young priest, he also served as a curate in Dunloan. More recently, he has been the parish priest of both Drumhone, that's Ballintra, and Town of Willy, Donegal and Clare. On to the Nationals now. We'll be speaking a little later on about the controversy surrounding the All-Ireland final on Sunday. That's the All-Ireland club football final. Kilmac Crud, the All-Ireland saga rolls on for them, of course. The prospect of an official challenge from the Derry champions, Wattie Grahams Glen, remains a distinct possibility. What do you think should be done in that situation? There are a couple of rules from the GEA rulebook that apply to this situation. There were 16 players on the pitch, 16 Kilmac Crud players on the pitch towards the end of that game. And Glenn had a 45, and then you could talk about what's the advantage, disadvantage and all that side of stuff, side of things. But the bottom line is the rules were broken. They had 16 players when they should have had 15, and quite helpfully they've been counted pretty much in every paper today. Glenn are in a sticky position, aren't they? Because to some extent, after the match, the manager accepted the results, even if there were 16 players on the pitch. But then again, you could also argue that the Kilmac Crud victory is tarnished somehow, but Glenn don't want to seem like sore losers and make an appeal. But the GEA have two rules that kind of apply here. One, they could order a replay. There's other measures they could do as well. But what they've actually done is they've said we're waiting to see if there's a complaint from Glenn. So it's a tough one, isn't it? It's hard to know what the correct outcome is to that. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Also want your views on the news. The public hospital adult inpatient charges will be abolished From April of this year, under plans due to be approved by Cabinet today, Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly will seek Cabinet approval to draft legislation that would abolish the €80 charge. The abolition of the charges from April could save adults receiving inpatient care up to €800 per year. Patients are charged up to €80 per day with an annual cap of a maximum of 10 days or €800. And we've carried the stories here on numerous occasions. I think the debt collectors will be those most opposed to this. But it's good news, isn't it? Anything that saves someone who's sick or recovering from an illness getting a big bill through the post or a threatening letter, I think it has to be welcomed. The government last year abolished the charge for children under 16 as part of moves to reduce the cost of healthcare for families. Separately, Minister for Rural and Community Affairs, Heather Humphreys, will unveil details of a new €50 million fund for communities who've stepped up in accommodating refugees from Ukraine and elsewhere. All right, on to the Independent, and a lot of conversation about EVs and people changing their cars and how it's different for us in rural Ireland compared to urban Ireland. Well, support for motorists in rural areas to buy electric vehicles may continue while grants for all other buyers are scaled back. Zero Emission Vehicles Ireland, the state office in charge of promoting EVs, said, however, such a scheme would only work if there were safeguards against its abuse. How would it be implemented, though? I mean, obviously, you could say that you lived in Dunloe, but in fact, you spent most of your time driving your EV around Dublin. You could say that because you would get a discount on the EV. How will it be implemented? Is there any other example of sort of a different taxation, rural and urban? But anyway, head of ZEVI, Ziva, Aoife O'Grady, said she was looking at ways of providing targeted supports for rural buyers. I live in Dublin, but I have grannies in the country, Ms. O'Grady said. I don't want a situation where you register a car at granny's address up a Boreen, but it's for driving in Cork, Limerick or Dublin. Assessment of rural Ireland. You'd register the car up a Boreen. Grants for the purchase of new EVs are to be reduced from July and gradually phased out. But Miss O'Grady said she had a capped budget and providing public money to continue grant aided aiding a product that was becoming more affordable and popular in any case would not be the best use of public money. She said EVs represented around 20% of the new car market, but would soon reach 30% and before long would be 50%. I can't see a rural-only initiative being introduced because I just think it would be too complicated and they wouldn't want to do it. But we shall watch with interest. I think it would be welcome. On to the Irish Daily Mail, and a full security audit is needed in every hospital following the killing of an 89-year-old person, the Nurses Union has said. The Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation has demanded a security review after the death of retired farmer Matthew Healy at Mercy University Hospital in Cork. The last such review in Irish hospitals took place in 1996, the INMO said. It's alleged a man assaulted Mr. Healy with a walking frame in the six-bed ward at around 5:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. The incident has prompted fresh concerns around safety in Irish hospitals. And right off the bat, a number of you messaged in with your concerns about the level of security at our own local hospital. We have an inquiry in with the HSE just to find out what level of security is there at what time. As soon as we get that information to you, we'll bring it to you. I mean, a lot of these hospital sites are absolutely massive. You can't have a guard or security in every ward either. It's hard to know. Pascal Donoghue, this is the Irish Daily Star. Pascal Donoghue last night said he has dealt with sincerity and seriousness with all questions about political donations during election campaigns. You feel sorry for him, don't you? The Public Expenditure Minister is due to make a second statement in the Dáil this afternoon regarding political donation payments made to him during elections. It follows the revelations made during a statement last week that Mr. Donoghue committed an error and failed to disclose electoral postering, work done by him for him by a businessman, Michael Stone. He's chief of a company called Designer Group. The bottom line is today what happens is he gets up and he makes his statement. And unless the opposition, Sinn Féin or whoever it might be, unless they land a body blow, unless he's asked a question that he struggles to answer, it'll all be done and dusted today. You'll not hear much of it again. The only way that story continues, really, unless something else is revealed, is if he struggles to answer any questions this afternoon. And if he gets through today, that's the end of it. That will be the end of it. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But then you see, in terms of business in the Dáil tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, the opposition then could not be seen to continue at it. Do you know what I mean? They're going to have to move on to other things like health and housing and other really important things that affect everybody's everyday life. They can't continue this beyond today. So unless they manage to land a political punch, so to speak, he struggles to answer a question, it's done. It's done today. Unless I'm wrong. If, however, he struggles or he says, I'll have to come back with further questions on that, it might continue. But as I say, the country as a whole, I think, will want more serious matters that affect us and affect people's lives discussed in the Dáil from tomorrow onwards. But anyway, we'll see how it pans out. That's just my read of it. The Sun tells us, as do many papers, a judge ruled yesterday there is sufficient evidence to return for trial 8 men charged with offences linked to the murder of Lyra McKee. The journalist was shot dead in 2019 in Derry, as we all know. Following a 2-day preliminary inquiry hearing at the Bishop Street Courthouse in Derry last week, District Judge Ted McGill said, I'm satisfied that there is such evidence. Mr. McGill had been asked by defence barristers to reject the prosecution's identification and video evidence, but yesterday he said such matters could be raised with the trial judge. Two of the men returned for trial, Jordan Devine, 22, from Bishop Street, and Peter Kavanagh, 34, from Elmwood Terrace, deny murdering Ms. McKee. And finally, on to the Irish Daily Mirror this morning. And a business group representing publicans has warned government plans to make it easier to get a bar licence will kill rural pubs. The Licensed Vintners Federation, which has 4,000 members in the capital, claims governmental liberalisation of licences will lead to pubs on every corner in major towns and cities while more rural pubs die off. Yeah. I don't understand here. I think they're kind of using rural pubs as an excuse to limit competition in the cities. LVA Chief Executive Donal O'Keefe yesterday branded the government plans unwanted and ill-conceived. A spokesperson for the LVA claimed the government has decided to effectively liberalise the pub market from 2026. It claims this will happen as the value of many of these premises will evaporate overnight. The LVA made the claims yesterday before it is due to meet politicians today at the Joint Directors Committee on Justice. Now, I don't know exactly how all of this works, but there's an awful lot of pubs have already closed down in rural Ireland, and I suspect unless the cities are buying up these rural licences to operate in cities, I don't see what difference liberalising the laws might make. I would imagine there are, if rural licences have to stay in rural Ireland, I presume now there are way more licences than there are pubs, right? Now, I'm not sure if they can be transferred into cities or not, but I'm a bit suspicious why city-based publicans might be worried about rural pubs when really what it's about is further competition for them. I don't know. Do you have an insight into that? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps or texts, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Okay, so quite a few of you following, obviously, the awful, sad and tragic events in Cork were curious as to level of security at Letterkenny University Hospital. So as I promised yesterday, me and Caroline inquired on your behalf, and the answer is this. Letterkenny University Hospital have security based at the hospital on a 24-hour basis, 7 days a week, of course. Two security guards are on duty at any given time throughout the day and at night. So they have two on 24/7 is the answer to that question, if that's helpful to some of you. Right, students are considering putting off going to college because they simply can't afford it. If you're in this situation, please let us know. 086 60 25,000. That is the view, by the way, of the Union of Students of Ireland. It follows new figures which show 600 students asked St Vincent de Paul for help last year. The charity spent €2 million on helping students with fees, accommodation and commuting, which is very good to hear, but unfortunately they have to do that. Rosa Glacken is president of St Vincent de Paul in the Northwest region and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Rosa. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, thanks. Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
And it's lovely to have you back on. Right, okay. Any surprise to you with this news coming from the Students of Union of Ireland from a Northwest perspective?
No, and I'm very glad that they highlighted this because we have seen this for quite some time, and the increase year on year in the level of stress and lack of finance for students. And we have had an ongoing campaign, you know, with the government to increase the grants, raise the level at which they access the grants, and so on. We've had some success. There was a slight change in the budget regarding registration fees and some of the support under SUSE. But Greg, what really would concern us, and it was highlighted yesterday, are the students who are just outside that threshold to receive grants. And I'm sure many of your listeners will identify with this. So basically, families who just don't qualify for the grants, they are in severe financial difficulty. For starters, the students have to pay their registration fee, which is substantial. It has come down somewhat, but it was 3,000. Then, as you mentioned, after that, you have accommodation and maintenance fees and travel to and from. And I mean, here in Donegal, students are travelling from quite a long distance if they're not staying locally. Again, cost of travel and so on, and the fees and other things I have mentioned. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there is a huge demand and it's rising.
Yeah, and the cutoff is, you know, there's always going to be people just outside the cutoff, but this cutoff is, I think it's disadvantageous for the country because there's people who can't do extra work because if they do extra work, for example, take overtime or work during the summer, depending on their job, then they can't apply for the SUSE grant. And then there are those who simply can't send their students to third level, and particularly the way this country is going in terms of the level of you know the level of qualified students we'll need. It's counterintuitive from the state to me that you have people could be the brightest brains of our future not going on to third level. It doesn't suit everyone, I understand that, but not going on to third level because families with both working parents often simply can't send their students to university. As I say, it would be in the government's interest to ensure as many people can get to third level as want to.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Education is so, so important. As you say, there's trades if people want to follow that route, but people who want to go and get a degree leading on to employment, it's so important that they get that opportunity. Mm. And one of the things I find most upsetting in recent times would be where students have come to us and they've struggled through maybe 1 or 2 years with maybe 1 or 2 to go, and were considering dropping out because they just couldn't afford it or the families couldn't. And the other aspect of it is students at one time, you know, would have summer jobs or weekend jobs to support themselves very successfully. And that's not as, you know, available as it was.
But even though if they do that, that's counted towards, I believe, the income in the home.
Yes.
So if they do go out and work during the summer, that has to be counted in your SUSE application, which again, they're trying to do the right thing to have a few quid to get them through the winter at college. But it's disadvantageous because it can put them over a limit for the family to be able to avail of a SUSE grant. Again, that doesn't make sense. You're discouraging people from trying to help themselves.
That sums it up. Yes, absolutely. And as you say, it's so disappointing for those who have the ability to go out there and become whatever their dream is, and yet they can't access their course due to lack of finance.
Now, Rosa, you were able to help quite a number of students in Donegal last year. You actually have those figures for us, I think.
Yes, we have, Greg, an education committee which looks after the whole region. But locally, the conferences, if they can afford to help a student, they will do so on the ground. We reckon we would have spent between 120 and 130,000 last year assisting students. But just remember, that's third level only. You could double that then because, as you know, the beginning of the school year is our second busiest time for demand. Overall, education is a huge spend for us at the moment, but it's so important that it is a priority.
And do you find that you're helping students who managed to get, you know, registered in college and then find themselves struggling? Or are you able to actually facilitate people going to third level, or is it a mixture, Rosa?
Yes, it's a mixture of those, Greg. It just depends. It's a case-by-case basis, obviously. We do have strict criteria, and they need to show that they have applied as much as possible for whatever funding may be available to them. And we usually meet the students and discuss their needs and look at how best we can help. But we do our best to help as many as possible that we can afford to.
Mm-hmm. And this is why supporting St. Vincent de Paul is so important, isn't it? Because, you know, this is the type of stuff that the organisation does, that it's only when, you know, we got this release from the Students' Union of Ireland that we invite you on, and then we can understand that I think it's 22-odd students were assisted. Actually, in fact, it's a total of 62 students were assisted in Donegal with a cost of over €130,000. So that's when people are supporting and donating to St. Vincent de Paul. That's, it's making a big difference to a lot of people. That's a lot, because that's not just the students you're helping there too. That's mums and dads and guardians that maybe a little bit of pressure has been taken off them as well.
Oh, absolutely. That's a very important aspect of it. You're quite right. As well as that, you know, some of the families have more than one student. Now you can imagine the financial pressure of that. So obviously, we'd be very sympathetic there as well. And you know, the best we can do, as you say, is depending on how we are supported. But again, I would have to say, as always, the public in Donegal are still extremely generous, and our shops around the county are doing extremely well also, and they're a great source of income for us.
Right. How can people best support St. Vincent de Paul, Rosa, while we have you on?
Well, people who donate to our shops or come in and support our shops, that's very important. If they wish, they can make a donation to us online at svp.ie, or drop a donation into either a shop, or if they know somebody locally involved with the society, people are very good that way.
Okay.
And some of us have resumed Churchgate collections as well.
Right, so bring your cash with you. Thanks, Rosa.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Take care of yourself. Lovely to see you again. Rosa Glacken, president of St. Vincent de Paul in the Northwest region. A total of 62 students in Donegal helped last year with their college fees. That's students being forced to turn to charity and their families in order to continue their education, so then they can qualify and contribute to society. It doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me that they should have to do that. But anyway, as I say, if you're affected by that, contact us in confidence, 0860 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. We had a message in that read as follows. Hi, Greg. Just wondering if your listeners know that those Letterkenny gift cards reduce in value by €2 every month if not used inside a year. I think this is very unfair, as those who gifted the cards did so in good faith, and they should not lose their value. Now, this was a big controversy in terms of gift cards, not LK gift cards, but gift cards over the years, and new legislation was brought in. So you get the full value of the gift card for a year, and then after that, they reduce in value. And we got on to the Chamber just to get a response from them to make it absolutely clear for everyone. This is correct. The terms and conditions are on the back of the card, and we have a notice in our office where the majority of cards are sold. This is normal practice in the industry, and we implemented this when we had to change the expiry. Up to December 2019, Shop LK cards had a one-year expiry date, so the card would stop working after the anniversary. The government decided that they no longer wanted expiry dates, so we had to change our cards along with others in the industry. Our Shop LK gift card is operated by a third-party company, AML Trading. When we had to remove the expiry date by law, we wanted to ensure we kept a system with no charge to the purchaser of the cards and no commission charges for the outlets. Other well-known cards in the market charge 9% on purchases with a card. This was the other model we could have moved to, and we would have lost many of our independent outlets as a result. So at least when you spend your Shop LK cards, well, not at least, because it's a very important part of it, you get full value and the retailer gets full value And that retailer, of course, is the same retailer that employs our children and sponsors our football teams and all that kind of stuff. But if you don't use it after a year, it's docked €2 a month for an administrative charge. On the face of it, personally, I don't think that's bad. I don't think that's terrible, to be honest with you. But obviously, the original listener, not happy. All right, back with our next guest in just 2 minutes. Right, I mean, as you'd be aware, plans to upgrade the A5 were announced in 2007, but have been delayed amid funding issues, legal challenges, and according to Enough is Enough, 44 people have since died on the road. The proposed upgrade would improve the road between Auchnacloy in County Tyrone and new buildings in Derry. Kate Corrigan is mother of Nathan Corrigan, who tragically died in a collision on that road in December 2021. Kate, thanks for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome.
It must be. I don't even know how to attribute an emotion, Kate. But you know, I think we can all accept that this road needs to be upgraded. That it's incredibly dangerous. You know more than anyone how dangerous it is. It's incredibly frustrating, the delays.
Yeah, it is very frustrating, and unfortunately, with all the delays, it's just costing lives. I live in Gibbahi. I have been living there all of my life. I'm a local resident, and so I have first-hand experience of both, unfortunately. Losing Nathan has been the most horrific experience ever. And, we've just had his first anniversary there at the end of December, and along with his two wee friends, Peggy and Peter, that also died in the accident. And, the GAA campaign, Enough is Enough, and absolutely, they're quite right. Enough is Enough. Now is the time to take action. The upgrade needs to go ahead. It's a priority to protect and save lives. And the loss and devastation that my family and the other families involved in our accident, not to mention the families who have all lost loved ones on that road, the pain and loss and devastation that you endure and have to endure now for the rest of our lives, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And we, you know, we use the term accident and it rolls off the tongue, and I understand that. But one of the factors in any collision is road conditions. You know, there's driver error, there's the condition of the vehicle, and there's road conditions. Yeah. Now, we've established that this road contributes to collisions. So, in other words, almost using the phrase accident is giving whoever is holding this development up a pass, if you know what I mean, because it's clear that the condition of this road is contributing to the awful loss of life that you, I mean, and it's so recent for you, Kate, losing Nathan. But do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it can't go on. Something has to be done to make this road safer.
No, it really can't continue. The high volume of traffic on the A5 has just increased year on year. And it's just not fit for purpose. There's huge amount of HGV lorries travelling on it at all hours of the night, and it's their only pathway from the north, you know, from Auchnacloy direction down through to Derry. And there's heavy machinery, there's engineering work, there's rural traffic, all mixed in with local people trying to access the side roads, and it's just not fit for purpose. The local people are aware of the pitfalls and the dangers and the junctions that they need to be watchful for and all of that. And I'm not saying that other people are not watchful, but it is. It's the road condition. It's the makeup of the road and the volume of traffic that's expected to travel on it. There was recent road work done there at Kelly's Inn at the junction along where Nathan's accident happened. And within 5 minutes of temporary traffic light systems being set up, the tailback of volume of traffic is just staggering. It could be tailed back 3-4 miles. And if you actually stood and looked at the variety of the traffic that was in the queue, it's staggering. And it's the matter of life, to preserve life and for the upgrade to go ahead.
Yeah, and I think this intervention from the GEA, their A5 Enough is Enough campaign, I think it adds really strong weight to it. But I think really it's indicative of the loss of life and serious injury that an awful lot of people have been affected by, not least former Tyrone player Kevin Hughes, his brother and sister. He lost them in separate crashes. We also heard two on the launch from Peter Canavan. He grew up along the A5, so he knows himself too. I'm sure he knows people that have been seriously injured or killed on this stretch. Do you hope that this intervention will progress things, Kate?
Absolutely. As a bereaved parent and bereaved family, all we have is hope. And so, yeah, we can only hope that this will make a change. It will spark off interest, raise awareness, and for the people in positions of power to sit up and take stock of what we are saying. Nathan was our son. He's just not another number. He's just not another statistic, as no family member is. And, I mean, we have lost him out of our lives forever. And we have to live with that, unfortunately. But having a campaign like this, where it's driven by passionate people and heartfelt stories and real experiences, is a very positive thing. And I think it's great that the GAA are spearheading it. They have a great following. They have great influence. And I just hope everybody gets behind them and supports them in whatever way they can, if it's sharing their posts and things like that on social media and whatever. And hopefully people in positions of power will get together and they will move forward with it.
Yeah, and Kate, you make a really good point there, because people often think, well, what could I do? Well, with the power of social media now, all you have to do is find the posts, share it, paste, copy in a politician that might have some influence on this. Do you know what I mean? People can have an influence now, and social media has given people that power. So no longer can we say, well, there's nothing I can do. We can do something.
Oh, we can, surely. And I mean, I never thought I would ever be speaking at a public event for any occasion. But we have to stand up now, and we have to say, and we have to tell our stories, and we have to give our support. And as you say, social media, like, share, do whatever you can. There's avenues to put in representations to the upcoming another public inquiry to do with it. Like if you Google A5 Western Structure, I think something like that, you can get your voice heard on those platforms as well. So there are ways for people to show their support, and I would just appeal to everyone to do that. I mean, what I'm doing and what we're doing as a family, it can't change the outcome for us, unfortunately. So, but if it makes a change and helps prevent another accident, another fatality, I mean, it needs to be done. And you're right in what you're saying. It's the impact. Like Kevin Hughes told his story about losing his brother and sister, and my heart was just breaking all over again. I couldn't imagine what it's like to lose two children. And Peter Canavan, witnessing or being there at the scene of an accident 40-odd years ago, has stuck with him. There was a little lady, Mrs. McGarvey, had been killed as she crossed over from the Kelly's Junction. For 5 years, my two sisters were sitting in Kelly's car park or Kelly's forecourt, and they witnessed her accident happening. And it's the long-term impact of all of that has on everyone. Has on us directly.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people directly affected by it.
It just ripples out. It ripples out the emergency services, the first people on scene, the first responders, the priests who have to come to administer the last rites. It's the fire crews, everything. Everyone is impacted, and that doesn't just go away within a week.
And I mean, I would say there's very few roads that have for so long been identified as being so dangerous that since they were identified as being so dangerous, there's been such a loss of life that there are solutions there to end it. And in fairness, I think, you know, the Irish government has committed its funding, and I'm sure it would be forthcoming if they get through some of the planning issues and the legal challenges. But I can't imagine there are few other examples or many other examples, sorry, anywhere else where we have the problem. We've known about it for so long. There's this incredible loss of life, and we have the solutions if we could just get the diggers on the ground, theory, you know, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah, That is it. The solution is there. It's all being passed. It's my understanding, and I'll stand corrected. Like, the political parties have all agreed to this. They've all signed up to this. Everybody is in agreement that this needs to go ahead. And there's a small group of objectors who are lobbying the courts with laws that are in place to protect the environment, or to, you know, to safeguard the quality of air and things like that. And that's what's stopping this from going ahead. And they have a hefty team of legal advisors behind them who are in positions to lobby the courts with these laws. But from my take, and from any family or anyone who has lost anyone on the roads, none of that should really matter. It's human lives that matter. It's human lives that count. All those other factors, yes, they may have, you know, a place. But however, nothing can take precedence over human lives. And I mean, I'll continue to lobby for the upgrade to go ahead. Nathan can't stand up for himself now, unfortunately not. The other boys, Piggy and Peter, are the same, and anyone else who's lost their lives. But the families that are left putting their lives back together again, we are the voices for them now. And as I said, everybody, I hope everybody gets behind this campaign and does whatever they can. Yeah. And not to feel they can't. Everybody can contribute in some way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Listen, Kate, I'm sorry for everything that you're going through. Having gone through, it's everything you've gone through. I mean, any of us, I don't think you have to have children, but I think when you do have children, you know, you try and put yourself in the position you're in, Kate, and it's an impossible one. And for you to be able to speak publicly and so bravely is so impressive. And you do Nathan so proud, and the rest of the family, I'm sure, as well. Kate, thanks very much for helping us let people know. I really appreciate it.
Not at all. Thank you for your time as well. And thanks, your lovely Kate. Comments. All the best.
All right, bye-bye. Kate. That's Kate Corrigan there, who lost her lovely son, Nathan. Just anniversary just passed in December 2021. He, along with two friends, those lives, along with 41 others, have been lost since an upgrade was announced for the A5. That's 2007. That's a lot of people. That doesn't mention the serious injury. That doesn't mention, as Kate quite rightly, and it just goes to show it in her own grief and what she's gone through, recognising the impact this has on emergency services, on the clergy, you know, on witnesses. It's remarkable for Kate, for what she's gone through, to see that all and to be able to express it so well. We appreciate her time. Look out for the posts. It's the GEA are backing it. It's the A5 Enough is Enough campaign. As I say, and I said to Kate there, we wonder sometimes, well, what can we do? Well, you can tag people in it, you can share it, and it doesn't cost you anything, but you can be contributing to that cause. President Michael D. Higgins, he's called for homework to be banned. He's given hope to a new generation of students that the bane of their after-school evenings could be scrapped. President Higgins argues that this would make time for young people to engage in more creative pursuits outside of school hours. The former Arts Minister believes that school activities should end at the school gate. When asked what his opinion of homework, President Higgins said, "I think myself, really, that the time at home and the time in school is an educational experience and should be finished at the school, and people should be able to use their time for other creative things like Fortnite and Call of Duty." Well, he never said that, but anyway. Anya Lynch is CEO of the National Parents Council Priory. Good morning to you, Anya.
Good morning.
I suppose, you know, we've discussed this, as many programmes have over the years, and you know, it really is, whatever about the students, it's a bane for parents. But I suppose it's about what's right for the students, you know, and we have, if we were to eliminate homework, you know, every action has a reaction. So we'd have to see then what the outcomes might be a little bit further down the line, and what could be achieved in school that's not being achieved at home. It's not just as easy, I presume, as saying, right, no more homework.
No, well, I think one of the difficulties we have is, even when we use the term homework, what do we mean? So we don't really have a standardised view of homework, and we don't have a standardised view of what the purpose of homework is. And I think that, that really underlies one of the problems with homework. So what one child is getting for homework in sixth class could be very, very different to what another child in another school is getting, or even in the same school. So I think we need to look at what we feel the purpose of homework is. We do know that it can have positive effects I think what President Higgins was saying is really interesting, because that sense of that we children should be doing something more creative at home really does, I suppose, give an indictment on homework as how it's seen as not creative. So I think homework can give us a real important link between home and school, but I think it also gives us an opportunity, particularly for children who may struggle in school with that kind of very formalised learning, to apply some of the learning that happens in the school in that formal way into a kind of a real world experience. So how do we apply some of the mathematics or the science that children are learning in school in a real way within the home and the community? And I think they're the kind of opportunities that we would like to see homework take place with.
Yeah, my concern about homework, it's not the pain in the backside that it is, I think, for a lot of people. It's how fair it is, because, you know, it depends, I think, an awful lot whether the student can work independently of everyone in the house, if they do need a bit of support at home, whether or not the parents are available or have time or have the ability to help at home. You know, I think all of that being done in the school is more equal, because hopefully teachers are able to spot more where people might need more help. I just think when you send everyone home with the same homework, it's never going to be treating all of our children equally or fairly, I don't think. That's my concern with it.
I think that's a fair point. And I think a lot of schools try and differentiate with homework, so children in the same class might get different... more of the same that they did in the class. You're pointing out a really important issue, that those children that could do it in class, homework's fairly boring for them. The children who couldn't do it in class, it kind of reinforces the fact that they're unable to do it. So it doesn't really serve any child well. But I think what we can do is look at how homework... I mean, whenever we talk about homework, we often talk about how long should they be spending on it. That really does send red flags straight away. It's a chore and a task that has to be completed by both the child and the family. But what we need to do is maybe not concentrate on the length of time children are spending on it, but the activities that they're doing and the richness of the activity that creates that kind of learning through things that they've very formally learnt within the classroom, but applying it to home situations and how that can maybe be fun within the family and not that chore that has to be done.
Yeah, because also too, dependent where you are, you could have a student that lives next to a school, you know, gets up at 8, has breakfast in school, home at whatever time, 4 or something, but then there are other students, they're could be up at 7 o'clock, even before that, to get a school bus or to get a run in with mum and dad or mum or dad, or and then not home till 5 or 6. They put the bag down, maybe have something to eat, then the books have to come out for another hour. I don't think that's a workload I don't think would benefit an adult, let alone a young person. And also too, I understand what you're saying about how, you know, homework can be tailored to each individual student. I'm not really quite sure that happens, though, is it? I mean, just do there's no formula for it. I mean, you're relying on having a good teacher there, aren't you?
Well, I think the fact that you say there's no formula for it does you know, get to the heart of some of the difficulties we've had. We have every teacher individually has to develop homework for their class. And, you know, we're talking about trying to develop creative homework, homework that links the home and the school and applies formal learning to informal situations. And I think we need to, considering the amount of work time that children spend on this and considering the amount of time that families invest in this, and sometimes the conflict and the friction that it causes within family, I think we have to do better than that. I think we have to look at it in a standardised way and give teachers real support in what kind of homework that they can give that we know is effective, that we know is supportive of children's learning, and we know that works. And I think there's a prime opportunity coming up in terms of the fact that the primary school curriculum is being redrafted and reimagined. And I think, you know, the amount of time that is being put into the time that children spend in school learning, some of that should be put into, well, what kind of things can link this with the home, and that then teachers get more of a support around setting, you know, really effective and impactful homework.
What about someone might make the argument that, you know, we want the path of least resistance now in every element and aspect of life, that if you want to do well, you have to do the graft, and maybe the process we have at schools at the moment weeds out who is going to achieve and who might need to find an alternative way their life, you know, in not necessarily going down the educational route into third level. It's not my view, by the way. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, no, and I think the argument would be fair if we had the evidence to show what was making a difference and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. And you know, in national and international studies, we have some of that, but there isn't enough research into the kind of activities that children take home to do that make an impact. So just grafting at homework for grafting's sake with no sense of the fact that this is useful or impactful doesn't seem fair on children's time, and it doesn't seem respectful of children's time or families' time, in mm-hmm. fact. Okay. And one of the things that we do know is that when parents are involved in children's learning, they do better, and we know that from decades of research. Mm-hmm. But what we're doing in a lot of families is setting up that parental involvement to be a very, very negative experience. Mm-hmm. Where it's nagging and
but
cajoling.
It's very frustrating if you can't help. It's very frustrating because you... And also, too, you know, there are some speak out. I think the majority of us... I think the majority of us just endure, you know what I mean? And I don't think that's good for moms and dads and guardians, and I don't think it's good for the students either. All right, Anya, listen, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it this morning. Take care of yourself. That's Anya Lynch, CEO of the National Parents Council Primary. Loads to come on the 9 till noon show, including Community Garda information. That's coming up after the news and obituary notices.